On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're looking at the policy agenda of a children's mental health advocacy group. It's called Wisconsin Family Ties. Governor Evers' two-year spending plan proposes a big boost to education funding, including $47 million more in mental health aid for schools. DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, also seeks more aid for trauma sensitivity school training. DPI published newly available data on the use of seclusion and restraint in schools. Nearly half of all Wisconsin schools reported at least one incident where either seclusion or physical restraint was used last school year. Has your child been secluded or restrained? How did you feel afterward? How has your school approached such practices? It's 800-642-1234. Hugh Davis is Executive Director of Wisconsin Family Ties. Hugh, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks very much for having me.
Why is having this data on the use of isolation and restraint tactics in our schools, why is that important to you?
First and foremost, I think it's important because the visibility has resulted in us talking today, Kate. Mm-hmm. Prior to this, there was no statewide reporting of these incidents. And so even though we knew what was going on, we did public records requests for about 3 years worth of data, which found that there were roughly 20,000 incidents of seclusion and restraint every year, and that the very vast majority, about 80%, were happening with students with disabilities. And when we talked to individuals about this, we talk about the incidents of seclusion and restraint. They would say usually, well, that's not happening here, is it? And then we tell them that it happens about 20,000 times each year in schools, and they were totally shocked. And yet there was no, because it was us having to get a public records request to get that data, there was no widespread understanding of that. So in the update of the law in 2020, we felt it was really important to have visibility about this. And so I think it's borne out by the number of newspaper articles that have been written and the fact that we're talking about it today. And hopefully the next step then is for us to actually do something about that and use more humane, more compassionate ways to deal with challenging behavior.
So these tactics, you say, of using seclusion and restraint happening with 80% with students with disabilities, 4 out of 5 times these tactics are used, it's with a student with a disability.
Yes. Yeah.
What is going on
specifically
there?
There's not a incredible insight into the data because the data just reports that information. So it's a little hard to disaggregate that and to come up with any other conclusions specifically. But we do believe that a significant portion of this is used with children who have emotional or behavioral challenges. They're the ones most likely to have challenging behavior in school settings, be less compliant than most other students. And unfortunately, compliance is a major trigger to these incidents occurring. I think that that's probably why we're seeing this mostly with students with disabilities. The other thing that is that we found in our multiple years of public records requests, that it was also the vast majority of these techniques were used on younger students, elementary age students. Hmm. And so that's another issue that we could clearly take a look at in trying to reduce the utilization of these techniques.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about a state law that requires schools to now report whenever they isolate or restrain students. We're talking about it with Hugh Davis, who is Executive Director of Wisconsin Family Ties, which pushed an organization which pushed for the law. What do you think about the use of isolation and restraints in schools? Should these practices be banned? Should there be exceptions for certain situations? 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You mentioned, Hugh, the elementary level, and several elementary schools reported hundreds of cases involving these practices in the 2019-2020 school year. How concerned are you that students are being isolated or restrained too often?
Very concerned about that. I think that if you would look at the research, particularly around seclusion, there has been absolutely no benefit found to secluding a student. There is federal legislation that's been introduced several times, has not passed, it's called Keeping All Students Safe Act, and that act would actually ban the use of seclusion. That is an approach that we at Wisconsin Family Ties support. We don't think there's any reason to seclude a child. So I think that that would help. If you take a look at the number of incidents that DPI reported, that would cut the number in about half if we took out the seclusion. When it comes to restraint, that's a little more challenging, and we're not saying that those measures should be banned, but we do believe that we ought to look more critically at when restraint is used. Restraint should be used as a last resort when nothing else has helped and when someone's safety is at imminent risk. And so in those cases, it is absolutely warranted. And we want people to be able to restrain someone who is either going to hurt themselves or hurt someone else. That is reasonable. It's common sense. And so we're not looking to ban restraint altogether, but we are looking at or wanting people to look at it more critically.
Yeah, so putting parameters around when it's used and when it is not appropriate. More than 1,000 schools in the state reported no incidents of isolation or restraints last school year. Could this mean schools are not properly reporting the incidents? What's going on there?
It's possible. I don't want to make any kind of, I don't want to speculate about that. But when we collected our data beginning in the 2013-14 school year, we saw a similar kind of response where we had schools that were either not reporting, did not respond to the public records request at all, or were reporting no incidents. And while I think that's perfectly possible, the likelihood of it seemed pretty long, given the fact of how prevalent the use of seclusion and restraint was in other school districts.
Do you think that there needs to be some clarifying legislation to improve the state's tracking of isolation and restraints, or so schools know exactly how to properly report it?
Well, the latest update, which was 2019 Act 118, did provide a lot of clarification.
Okay.
And so the clarification should already be there in state law. I think that it might be, this is the first year that this data has been reported to DPI. So there may be some additional training that is needed to make sure that schools are fully understanding what their requirements are under the law. But the clarification was provided in that act.
Hugh Davis, he heads up Wisconsin Family Ties. It's an organization that helps families with children who have mental health challenges. What do you think of a proposed ban on restricting minors in courtrooms for most cases? On restraining minors in courtrooms in most cases. How could lawmakers or state agencies help improve access to youth mental health services? What's working in your community? Where has your family felt stuck in getting help? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about youth mental health and the policy agenda of an organization that provides peer support to families with children who have mental health challenges. Wisconsin Family Ties was founded more than 30 years ago by a group of parents who wanted to improve children's mental health. What do you think of Governor Evers' state budget proposal to boost mental health aid to schools? What do you think of schools using physical restraint and seclusion tactics? 800-642-1234. Hugh Davis is executive director of Wisconsin Family Ties. He's with us for 10 more minutes. Let's go to Belinda now in Phillips. Hi, Belinda. What would you like to say?
Hi, good morning. So I have a special needs child. He's in second grade now. And we've been to a couple of different schools in the northern region up here. So he actually had a couple incidents where he was restrained and or isolated at a school when he was in first grade. His behavior seriously declined. We were having more issues with him. And then we transferred over to a new school where they really kind of shy away from using those at all costs. And it's been amazing to see his development and growth. So I just happened to see, as a parent, just the deficit that some of those restraints and isolations had for him.
Belinda, thank you so much for sharing your personal perspective on this. A second grader with special needs and switched to a new school that isn't using the physical restraint and seclusion tactics. Hugh?
Yeah, well, I think that certainly shows, unfortunately, it's the experience of many parents and families in our state, way too many in my mind. But it also shows that it's not the kid that we have to worry about changing or fixing. It's that the difference can be made by adult attitudes, actions, and approaches. When we as adults alter what we do, because let's face it, the only behavior that we can control is our own. As much as we'd like to control someone else's, it's ourselves that we have the power over. When those adults take a look at what they're doing and their approaches and attitudes, kids improve. It's been proven time and time again. There's tons of research on it. And yet we tend to want to use these consequence-based approaches that, by and large, will work with neurotypical kids quite a bit, but not with kids who have, not with students with disabilities. Just does not work.
Let's bring in Susan now in Richland Center. Susan is a special education teacher. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just have a few things to say. First of all, every teacher has gone through a CPI training if you're going to have to restrain a student. And in that training, the last thing you ever do is you don't want to restrain a student. First of all, you lose that trust for them. You embarrass the student. There's a chance of both of you getting in hurt. And you do have to report. It does not matter. If you put a student in seclusion for 5 minutes because they need that time to calm down, or if you restrain, you have to do a report. And then the parents know about it. We don't advertise it. Not everybody has to know. But I just wish once in a while people need to come into the schools and actually see what's going on. So, you know, it is getting reported. This is a waste of time. And I just wish once in a while we would hear what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. We don't just restrain it. It has to be documented. It's the law. And it happens. And there are kids who cannot control their temper, and it has to happen for the safety of everybody. But it's the last resort.
Yes, Susan, thank you so much for bringing your perspective and, you know, saying that, look, this is last resort, Hugh.
It should be last resort, as I said earlier, and I'm not saying that we should ban restraint. She's right. According to the law, you do have to report it. I do think that there are lots of places across the nation who have dramatically reduced the use of seclusion and restraint. I think that you know, we should not think that we here in Wisconsin are so unique that we can't look at those same kinds of approaches. And so I would disagree with some of that that says that everything that is happening is necessary. We do know when we delve into some of these situations that the underlying issue starts with some sort of noncompliance. To me, noncompliance is not a reason to restrain a student. The time when you restrain is when it is a last resort. She also mentioned training that that school staff need to receive in order to restrain. So I'll just relate what a professor from one of the UW system universities told us a couple of years ago as we were looking into this situation, that they used that most prevalent training with their students who were going to go out to do their student teaching. And while it's true that that training does emphasize de-escalation over the use of restraint, it does teach how to restrain students. And what this professor found was that when the students were coming back from or talking about their student teaching experiences, one of the things that they were doing was they were talking about which restraint holds they used. That shocked the professor. And so what they have done is they've stopped training on how to restrain children. Mm-hmm. They train on the de-escalation part, but they've stopped using the restraint section of that training.
We are talking about youth mental health with Hugh Davis, Executive Director of Wisconsin Family Ties. The group advocates for parents of children with behavioral and emotional challenges. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Hugh, I want to switch gears here for a moment. You know, families have been under incredible stress this past year in the pandemic. Your organization provides that peer support for families. How do you help families through these times? What have you been hearing? What do you say and do?
I'll answer that in just one second. Kate, I did want to go back because the teacher who spoke mentioned something I think was important, saying that she wished that people would talk about the positive things that they do. And I can talk about that in terms of the pandemic. But I do want to say that I am probably one of the biggest supporters of public education in our state. Both of my parents were teachers. My brother is a teacher. My sister-in-law is a teacher. And my second daughter, is doing her student teaching right now to become a special education teacher. So I am an absolute strong supporter of public education in our state. I've testified for public education. I've protested for public education. So I am incredibly in awe of what teachers do on a daily basis. And when it comes to the pandemic, you know, we put more pressure on the education system than any other system, I believe. You know, they had to pivot on a weekend and go from in-person schooling to virtual schooling. And now many schools have hybrid school models where teachers are expected to engage students virtually as well as those in a classroom. So kudos to all teachers for hanging in there in what has got to be one of the most difficult times education has ever seen.
You go ahead. So, on the family component, how are you helping right now with these families in the stress they're experiencing?
Yes. So Wisconsin Family Ties probably had a little bit of an advantage over some other organizations because we have a geographically decentralized workforce. All of our parent peer specialists is what we call them. Are spread throughout the state, working out of their home offices, serving families in their local communities. So we managed our own internal organization virtually. We used the technology available, we used Zoom, phone, email, whatever we had to in order to manage our organization. So it was fairly easy for us to turn to use those same technologies that we had always been using to work with families. So we continued to do the same things that we always have done in providing support for those families, emotional support for those families, in helping them navigate really complex systems, helping them get their needs met, and providing some training and coaching along the way. So we've done all of those things. I will say, though, it has been more difficult, especially as people get burned out on the virtual model. There are, you know, everything is virtual. And I think we're now starting, you know, we've experienced for some time now people who are not willing to have the same depth of conversation that they were in person over technology. So we're looking forward to the end of the pandemic when we can meet face to face with those families.
Hugh, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate. I really appreciate the time.
Hugh Davis is Executive Director of Wisconsin Family Ties. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with State Senator Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls. We discuss how elections are run. That's after a news update here on the Ideas Network.